So we are now going to discuss essentials of the selection process, which is one of the core chapters, and that is chapter number 8. So this includes the various aspects related to the concept of selection, the various tests that are involved in the selection process, the various types of interviewing mechanisms that are done here. So employee selection, of course, this is a known topic. You might recollect that it has been discussed in the initial chapters, and it is the process of putting the right men on the right job. So it is, basically a critical process. Some perceive it as a negative process, but it is nevertheless an essential process. It is a procedure of matching organizational requirements with the skills and qualifications of the people at hand. Effective selection can be done only when there is effective matching. So one needs to diligently and prudently use their skills as a seasoned professional in hiring and recruitment to conduct the selection process. By selecting right candidates for the required job, organizations essentially save time and money, as we have seen in the various discussions that have happened before this slide. Proper screening of candidates, takes place during the selection procedure. So as we've seen, recruitment is a broad process. We add filters and funnels, and eventually we come to the right people being inducted into our system. So through this pictorial representation, we will gain an understanding of the employee selection process. So here we see there are various aspects that govern the employee selection process, right from the basic preliminary interviews to the application blanks to the written tests to the employment-related interviews to medical examinations and eventually the handover of an appointment letter on selection which has turned successful. Now let us look at each one in further detail. So, as the name goes, these are the screening interviews which were discussed in brief in chapter number 2, right? So, we had discussed in some places in brief, some places in detail. So, these are those screening interviews which happen at a very basic level, and they are used to filter or funnel out or eliminate the candidates who do not meet the minimum eligibility criteria laid down by the organization. The next is the application blanks. So the candidates who clear the preliminary interviews are required to fill these. We have already seen this in a, a prelim or a basic discussion which happened in the initial chapters. It contains data records of the candidates, such as details of age, about qualifications, reason for leaving previous job, experience, etc. Then, once people have been screened and they have been found to be eligible for the next round, they are administered with the written tests. So, various written tests are conducted during the selection procedure. These may comprise of aptitude test, intelligence test, reasoning test, personality test, etc. These tests are thus used to objectively assess the potential candidate, and they should not be biased. So these tests give you a clear idea whether you are hiring the right candidate or not. Now, objective means they are conducted on the basis of profound logic, tried and tested mechanisms, and don't go by instinct. Of course, we will have a more detailed discussion about this test in this and the next chapter as well. Employment interviews, are then conducted. So after clearing the written tests, now these rounds may be hierarchical in nature or some of the rounds may be mutually exclusive. So it is a one-to-one interaction between the interviewer and the potential hire or the candidate. It is used to find whether the candidate is best suited for the required job or not. But such interviews consume time and money both, so a careful consideration should be done, and the candidates should be eliminated if they don't fit in, in the earlier rounds. After clearing the preceding rounds, you will administer a medical. So many organizations, they have a mandate for a medical test to ensure the physical fitness of the potential employee. So this decreases chances of absenteeism on the part of an employee. The next is, once the medical examination is cleared, an appointment letter is crafted and a reference check is made about the candidate selected and finally appointed by giving a formal appointment letter. Now, here in this particular table, we have several criterion or basis which differentiate the recruitment process from the selection process. So let's quickly look and run through this. We have already discussed most of these points in earlier chapters. So here, recruitment, the meaning is an activity of establishing contact between employers and applicants. So there is no guarantee that this process will turn out into a successful induction into the system. Here it is a process selection of picking up more competent and suitable employees. The objective, to encourage large number of candidates to aspire for a job. Here it attempts at rejecting unsuitable candidates. So these are reverse processes. One is alluring people, creating a pool. The other one is selecting people from that particular pool, rejecting the ones who are unsuitable. The next is the process itself. So it's a simple process. You create an advertisement and you get many people, but the selection is more articulate and complex or complicated. The hurdles, candidates have not to cross over many hurdles. They simply need to send a resume of theirs, but here there are many hurdles that have to be crossed. So there will be tests administered, as we see. There are pre-screening procedures, there are personal interviews, then there are medical examinations to be done. Approach, it's a positive one. Here it is considered as a critical or a negative one. It precedes it is before selection, and of course it follows recruitment. So this comes next. This is the sequence. The economy, it's an economical method. Of course, not much cost go into it in terms of money and time, but here it is an intensive and an expensive process. In terms of time, less time as mentioned and more time. So I think, students, by now you have a crystal clear clarity about recruitment and selection and the differences between the two. So as we know, an organization needs to have members who are both skilled and motivated. That's the will and the skill element to perform their roles and the organizational functions. Either such members can be identified by a careful selection mechanism, or attempts can be made to develop them after hiring by use of extensive training and development. Thus, cursory meaning basic selection, may greatly increase training and monitoring costs, whereas spending more on selection will reduce these post-hire expenses. So it's a call that organizations have to take. If you are indulging in a basic form of selection, you have to invest later. If your selection process is rigorous, then you have to reduce the post-hire costs and expenses. Most organizations use more than one selection device to gather information about applicants. Of course, it is very important. It is quintessential to invest time in selection so that the wrong people are not inducted or are not hired by the organization. Often these devices are used sequentially. What we mean is, one round is followed by the other, then the next. So it's not something which is happening as a parallel process, but as a sequential process. So in a multiple hurdle decision making scheme, so you might want to eliminate a few who do not pass that hurdle, and you might want to pass a few who successfully overcome that hurdle. So this is the way selection process happens. Of course, we have seen this, but nevertheless, let's look at this particular flow. So let's consider this professional here is aspiring for a manager's role in a prominent banking setup. So what happens? So application blank is given, which rejects some candidates, he passes. Screening interview rejects some candidates, but he has been screened, found to be appropriate. So he is also tested. We will look at the tests in detail. And some candidates are rejected, but he gets through. Most interviews reject. So of course, from a broader pool, now we are coming down to a few. And this gentleman here seems to have passed this. Reference checks. So he has, you know, been checked. His references have been checked. They've been called and he has received positive reviews from them. Go ahead. Then conditional offers. So, you know, a conditional offer was made and he seemed to accept it. So he seemed to accept the CTC given. Then there was a physical and a medical examination which he passed and is eventually hired. So this is how the process of selection would run. So application blank and or resume is the first selection hurdle. So we'll discuss each of them in detail. Application blanks request information about education, history and skills, as well as names and addresses of the applicant and several references. So this is some very important data which can be used for a screening purpose. Most of the information requested is factual in nature and can be subject to a verification. Like your age, correct? So if you are citing your age as something, it can be verified through your documents like an Aadhaar card or a PAN card or a driver's license or a passport, correct? Such as degrees earned or date of employment. So degree, if you are citing that you have, you know, a postgraduate degree, a PGDBM from Mellenkurs, so can you provide a certificate? Can you furnish a certificate supporting that? If not, then that can be you know, a chance to reject you on a later stage. Application blank or resume fraud is of course not uncommon. This is one of the most commonly cited things. In fact, a recent article has shown many organizations have, you know, have actually revoked offers, have actually made people resign after finding fraudulent information. So an HR person, a recruitment professional, has to be very, very diligent when studying the application blanks. Most organizations use application blanks or resumes to screen out candidates who do not meet the minimum job specifications on education or experience. For example, if the mandate is that you have to hire a person from an A-grade institution, okay, they have to have more than 75%, you know, of in their particular passing year, okay, the final score, and they also need relevant 3 years of industrial experience. So if these are not available, anyone falls short, you move them out. So beyond these basics, a manager or HR officer may informally evaluate the application to find candidates who look most promising. So probably somebody who's a sports star, who's been awarded you know, an Arjuna Award and is falling short of a specific qualification, but would be a great addition to the organization. So then the manager can probably look beyond, or if they have some patents to their name. So again, this can be a special case. Yeah, you can pause the video and think of certain other ways where a manager or a recruitment professional may look beyond. So the criteria applied in making this judgment may not be explicit, job related or consistent from one screener to the next. So they might use their own biases, their own preferences, their own insights to make exclusions. A second way that organizations can use an application blank data is to apply a weighing scheme, in which only items known to relate to the job success are scored and utilized in decision making. So weighted application blank procedures have been shown to produce scores that predict performance, tenure, and employee theft. So, you know, the persistence of an employee, the retention rate can be, you know, analyzed, can be speculated using this mechanism. Using biodata, experience and accomplishment records for selection. So biodata, of course, is a term used to refer to any type of personal history, experience or education information. Some organizations use a biographical information questionnaire instead of or in addition to the usual application blank. These biodata questionnaires may be much more detailed than application blanks and may be scored with keys based on a very sophisticated statistical analysis. So a sort of a framework, you may say, might be created for this analysis. Of course, why is this done? To discourage inflated self-ratings, okay, many a times. And what happens here is the questionnaire may ask the applicants to list the names and addresses of people who can verify the experience. Huh? So some of these things act as hurdles to people who exaggerate on their application blank. In addition, some job experience questionnaires contain a few plausible sounding but non-existent task statements. So can people, you know, overcome these? Can people successfully answer these situational and job related questions is a part of the biodata questionnaire. Candidates who claim to have performed these non-existent tasks may be exaggerating their experience with real tasks. So this is what can come out of the analysis, and such people can be put on hold or they can be eliminated for the more genuine people to move through the next process. Now another, you know, important process is a test, which we'll spend quite some time in understanding here and in the subsequent chapter as well. So a test is a means of obtaining a standardized sample of behavior, correct? An excerpt of the behavior in a standardized or a formulated manner. So tests are standardized in content, scoring and administration. What is standardized? It is a tried and tested approach. It meets a certain standard. That is, every time a test is given, its questions are identical. So it meets a certain standard. Or in the case of tests with more than one form, equivalent. Okay, the scoring rules are constant for the participants. So they don't vary when there is a certain, you know, equal sample required or similar profiles are being tested. So a few of the important tests include the intelligent tests. So intelligence tests measure one's intellect or qualities of understanding. They're referred to as tests of the cognitive or the mental ability. So there are certain, you may say, qualities of intelligence, or as stated here, traits of intelligence, which are measured, which include the higher order thinking functions like reasoning, verbal and non-verbal fluency, comprehension, which is understanding something and replying, numerical ability, like something on the levels of a mathematical puzzle, correct? Memory related puzzles or memory related activities or tests, and spatial relations ability. So how do you connect the dots? How do you create, you know, some sense out of some simulation? Now, some of the important tests include the Binet-Simon, the Stanford-Binet, and the Wechsler-Bellevue, which are some of the important tests. Now, these are the names of the behavioral scientists who have, you know, invented these intelligence tests. So measuring intelligence tests allows to predict success in a variety of activities and to create a quantitative measure. Okay, so to measure a candidate's ability to perform. Now, of course, this is speculative, but this can be a kind of an accurate measure. So intelligent tests are gaining favor in the recruiting world as reliable predictors of future executive performance. The next sort of tests or the form of tests are called as the aptitude tests. So aptitude tests, they have basically emerged to be one of the most effective recruitment tools that enable organizations to identify candidate skills and talents. Now, as the pandemic has changed the way the companies operate, hiring decisions based on the candidate's resumes or phone screening will not provide accurate insights, and hence the need for a test which relates to their aptitude. So here they will be checked on their current skills and competencies, which are different than the intelligence or the intellect. So aptitude tests basically measure whether an individual has the capacity or the hidden, latent means hidden, hidden ability to learn a given job if given adequate training. The use of aptitude tests is advisable when an applicant has had little or no experience along the line of the job opening. For example, they're an engineer, but they might have not worked on a certain machine. But with their engineering knowledge, they may be able to do so. So can they demonstrate a certain competency, a certain level where their existing knowledge can be altered and made flexible? So aptitude tests help determine a person's potential to learn in a given area. So this is what I was referring to. So the aptitude tests, they indicate the ability or fitness of an individual to engage successfully in any number of specialized activities. Correct? So maybe, you know, if it's an army related, so, you know, there are some short-term commissions in the army or in the defense forces like the Navy and Air Force. And if a person has to be a warrior or a soldier, can they run for a quick distance? Can they have, you know, articulation abilities, planning abilities? So some of these can be a part of the aptitude test to further, like, you know, in the future, can they be successful as a defense officer? They cover areas such as clerical aptitude, numerical aptitude, mechanical aptitude, motor. So motor coordination is your, you know, the way your muscles react, how they coordinate. Okay, finger dexterity. So how, you know, how good are you with your finger movements, holding stuff, throwing things, catching stuff. Okay, and manual dexterity. So probably, you know, typing, moving around, you know, your balance, all these aspects. These tests help to detect positive and negative points in a person's sensory or intellectual ability. So sensory meaning the way you see, the way you hear, the way you smell, the way you probably feel certain things. And of course, we have covered earlier the intellectual capability. So these are the important forms of aptitude test. Already some of them have been mentioned in the previous slide. They can be mental or intelligence tests, which primarily tests more of your cognitive capabilities. A mechanical aptitude test. So these can be in the form of certain tasks which need to be performed from this domain. And psychomotor or skills test. So if you have to operate a machine, you have to operate a heavy machinery, how do you do that? Can you hold stuff? Can you perceive depth? And so on. So these tests have been expanded. I have just mentioned them in the previous slide. So let me discuss them in detail. So they measure these tests, the intellectual ones, they measure the overall intellectual ability of a person and enable to know whether the person has mental capability to deal with certain problems. So do they possess the higher order thinking? Can they evaluate? Can they compare? Can they analyze? Can they have all, you know, the judgment related skills? And certain problems have to be solved. The next is the ability to learn a particular type of mechanical work. Like, let's say blue collar workers, semi-skilled workers are being inducted to complete some work on a lathe machine or a CNC machine. So can they perform that job using their hands, using the dexterity? So these tests help to measure specialized technical knowledge and problem solving capabilities. The next is the psychomotor or the skill tests. So, you know, these are tests which are administered to measure a person's ability or capability to do a specific job, such as semi-skilled and repetitive. So similar here, but psychomotor is the coordination which is continuously needed to complete these jobs. So the vision needs to be proper, the movement needs to be proper, there needs to be a sequence which the body needs to follow, and so on. The next type of test is known as an achievement test. So an achievement test is a test of developed skills or knowledge. The most common type of achievement test is a standardized test developed to measure skills and knowledge learned in a given grade level. So as the name goes, achievement is something that has already been procured by a professional. So this is done usually through planned instruction, such as training or classroom instruction. So you gain certain proficiency or a certain skill which can be measured. Okay, so these are proficiency tests to measure one's skills or acquired knowledge. So for example, you might be asked about your knowledge about leadership. If you are claiming that you will conduct a high-end workshop on leadership, you will be asked about the various models, the various techniques related to this particular topic. So as a part of the achievement tests, work sample tests are most appropriate for testing abilities. So these are various abilities which are practically useful on the job. These abilities, considering today's day and age, may include aspects like typing, stenography, and technical trades. So a person who is skilled, as an operator in several technical trades might be an ideal aspirant. And this particular skill or competency can be captured through the achievement tests. So as the name goes, work sample. So work sample tests, they basically bear relationship between the test content and the job content, and of course the eventual job performance. So it's like a small excerpt or a small sample which comes out of the daily requirements which practically need to happen on the job. So hence these become very vital, or these become very essential in the interviewing context. In the process of selection, the next type of test is the PIP category of tests. Now, this is basically a short form or an acronym for personality, interests, and preferences. So this is what is a PIP. Now, these tests are defined or designed to understand the relationship between any of these and certain jobs. So what is the personality of the person? Is that personality playing a coherent sort of a role? Will it be advantageous to the organization, or will it be, antagonizing in the current role? So will it have an opposite effect, or will it be, friendly to that particular role? So these tests, they are designed to understand the relationship. As said, tests of one's personality traits or characteristics are sometimes referred to as personality inventories as well. So in simple language, an inventory means a list of items. So here it can also lead to the desired list of items. These tests, they basically help to measure characteristics such as maturity, sociability, objectivity, etc. So how mature is the individual? If they were, for example, to join a leadership role, would they be mature enough to lead a team? Would they be mature enough to create collaboration and coordination? Would they have an element of sociability and not act like a silo? And would they practice critical thinking? Would they be logical in their thought process? Would they use rationale, or what we call as objectivity? So these personality inventory tests, they do not have right or wrong answers. And these inventories, they basically help in selection decisions and are used for associating certain traits with salespeople or certain others with R&D personnel. So we are just giving you an example here of what sort of attributes or characteristics are required for a person who will be a part of a specific domain or a specific occupation is what can be, understood through these particular traits. Let's work with an example. Let's say Mr. A is a seasoned salesperson and is joining a new organization. So in this process, the new organization is interested in conducting a PIP test for the person. Now, generally, if you were to envision a salesperson, what comes to the mind? A person who's probably good with their targets, a person who, if need be, does a lot of legwork, a person who is optimistic or realistic in their outlook, a person who works under pressure, and so on. So in this particular inventory test, these attributes might be enlisted in front of the person, and they would be judged or tested on the basis of these key qualities or characteristics. Now, when it comes to probably a person from R&D, you would envision a person who is probably a very steady, a cool, calculated person, a person who does not want to take too many risks, but yet would love to experiment with, certain aspects of their job, do some analysis. So the tests would be administered in that particular fashion. Now, there are a few tests which are prominent examples which have been designed as personality inventories. So these are the Minnesota Multiphase Personality Inventory and the California Psychological Inventory. So these have been designed by the organizations mentioned here, and what they do is they actually create these particular tests and then they are administered to the people who subscribe or who purchase these particular inventories. So these inventories or tests help indicate which occupations are more in tune with a person's interests. So people who've already worked in that occupation can also be administered, and there can be people who are looked upon with an open area of interest. So these people can be administered these particular tests and put into those specific occupations. So these tests, they do not help in predicting the on-job performance. Yeah. So they just, as mentioned earlier, they just are able to cite the match or the fitment. So preference tests try to match employee preferences with jobs and organizational characteristics. So these are a part of the PIP tests. Now, personality test is used to know the behavior and response of a candidate to a situation and with other people in a group. So how do they interact? How sociable are they with a group of people is derived from this sort of a test. So what it does essentially is it tries to evaluate or assess the qualities. Now, certain interpersonal qualities, like the qualities of, let's say, empathy, okay, which is a key quality in today's job profile. Qualities like having a self-esteem, or as mentioned here, self-confidence, sympathy towards others, leadership qualities, etc. So these are some of the most desirable qualities for any sector in today's industry, and hence they need to be a part of the attributes or the skill sets or the qualities that are possessed by the candidates. Thus, these are required in organizations, right? As mentioned, interest test is conducted to find the likes, the dislikes and expectations of the candidates regarding the job. Now, the next type of test which can be administered under the process of selection are known as ability or aptitude tests. Now, these are currently standardized methods of assessing an individual's performance in different work-related tasks or situations. So they might be offered simulations, they might be offered excerpts of the actual tasks, and then there is an evaluation created based on the observation of how that candidate performs that specific task in a given situation. They basically measure potential rather than just academic performance. So academically, a person might know a lot, correct? So let's say there is an R&D scientist which has to be inducted. They know a lot academically, but are they aware of the actual workings required for that specific industry? So this is what is essentially measured here, that is the potential. Okay, and these are frequently used by employers as indicators of how people will perform in a specific work setting. So these may be considered as indicators which help predict the future, thus lending a good form of accuracy to the speculation about that person's future performance. Here we are going to continue with our topic of ability tests. So these are nothing but assessment tools with which mostly the employers, they tend to test and evaluate their employees or job candidates on certain skills and abilities. For example, if an organization like, let's say, a Volkswagen is going to employ test drivers, so they need to test their vehicles before the vehicles are sold. So they need to do brake tests, they need to do various other tests, durability tests, reliability of the vehicle. So they need those test drivers. Now, this is such an occupation or a profession where the driver might speak volumes about his ability, but without seeing him in the car, driving the car, racing the car at times, putting the car and his own life at peril, you wouldn't know whether that driver is capable of the given job. So in this particular, case, they need to be tested on that test track or a race track or whatever driving quality is desired from that driver. So assessment tests can measure various skills, right from problem solving to communication to manual dexterity to objective thinking, that is nothing but creative thinking, and other such associated skills. So what happens if a vehicle breaks down? Does the driver have the capability to do some basic analysis to, take a call on what needs to be done? Okay, so this may be some sort of a problem solving, correct? Now, if it's a leader, so if there is a sort of an, escalation or a contingency, what sort of communication can that leader do within the organization can also be a skill, correct? Thank you.